His name is Lyle Pressler, punk rock legend and music industry vet. His name is Jim Shear, most tenured VJ in the history of music television. It's Lyle and Jim, it's the week in music, and it all starts now. Greetings, everybody. My name is Jim Shear.
And I'm Lyle Pressler.
And on today's episode, we will tell you what happens when life gives Beyoncé lemons. The mega concert is happening. Serious allegations against Afrika Bambaataa. But first, we didn't have a show last week, so Lyle and I weren't able to talk about Prince, who all of you know shockingly died at the age of 57 2 weeks ago.
Wow. You know, it's funny because we've lost so many people, and we've talked about it, and that one kind of hit me a little bit hard. I'm not sure why.
Same with me. And I wasn't the biggest Prince fan.
Yeah, either was I. I mean, I saw him on the tour where he played in Purple Underpants. and then but I saw him at 930 Club in DC, which was fantastic.
That's
you know,
cool.
Little Red Corvette and all that stuff. It was great. And I more or less thought of him as being kind of a curiosity. And then I went to school at Northwestern, and there were people who were really into him who were from Minneapolis. So he was, to me, he was kind of like the Replacements. He was sort of like a guy from Minneapolis, you know. And then, of course, Purple Rain, you know. And then I went to see him play at the big arena in DC, and I thought it was really great. And I mean, the movie and everything. But of course, I realized later on with all this retrospective, I realized that I know all these songs. But I wasn't prepared for my emotional response to this. I was very emotional about this. I was surprisingly emotional about it.
I was close to tears.
Yeah.
And I was so surprised that happened because over the last handful of years, I've gotten into arguments with people, mostly younger people, who blindly claim that Prince is a genius. And I would say, well, I understand people who came of age musically in the 80s and 90s, they can say that. You tell me why he's a genius. And they would say, well, he plays lots of instruments. And I'm like, well, name me a definitive hit that he's done in the last 25 years. And they couldn't do it. So,
go ahead.
I mean, I always acknowledged, I never hated Prince. I always acknowledged that he was a genius. I love how he approached the game. But to me, his hits were never as mighty as Michael Jackson's or Madonna's. And I know they're kind of in different leagues, but his hits always felt dated to me.
I agree with you. I don't think they had the same kind of hitting power that that those other tracks did. I think that what he was able to do was he was able to span all of these genres, and he was able to do it. I think, Jim, the thing is that he did it so effortlessly that we kind of don't think of it as being that important. It's sort of like a guy, I mean, we always use sports analogies on the show. It's sort of like Bryce Harper. I mean, you know, it's like he goes up to the plate and he just swings like this almost laconic, or Mickey Mantle, like, you know, this sort of swing and the ball just goes. And we sit there and we go like, oh, okay, well, then it's just, it's whatever. It's no effort. And I think Prince was able to, there was no effort. Like you didn't see a sweat. I mean, unless he wanted you to see the sweat. Mm-hmm. But he didn't sweat. It was like he just did it and it worked. And I think that that lulled us into a kind of sleep about him. And we didn't realize until he was dead that we, oh, wow, you know, he actually did all this stuff. It was pretty amazing what he did.
See, I'm going to make a sushi chef analogy.
Okay.
Yeah, instead of a sports metaphor. So think of me as someone from Middle America who just eats at McDonald's.
All right.
And then I see Prince, and he's like a sushi chef. So I'm never going to touch raw fish. I'm never going to touch the stuff that he's chopping up, but I can appreciate his artistry.
Right. Okay. Okay. Yeah.
So
I got it.
So
yeah,
that's where I'm coming from. Because I watched the Saturday Night Live tribute to Prince.
Right.
And I probably watched for a good hour and 15 minutes. I didn't enjoy one song that he performed, but I couldn't take my eyes off of him.
Right, right.
Because he never played a hit on TV.
That's true. He never played a hit on TV. And I will say this too. One of the things that Prince is credited with is his ability to bring in sort of African-American audiences and white mm-hmm. audiences into the same room. And Minneapolis was a place where that was unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you went to Minneapolis in the early 80s like I did, it was like the number of interracial couples was insane. I mean, they easily, in that one town, outpaced the entire world. and that was their culture, and it was beautiful. I mean, it was wonderful. It was, like, fantastic. But I will say that when I went to see him at the Capitol Center doing Purple Rain, he would get up there and play guitar solos that went on for hours.
Yes.
And the African-American folks around me were irritated. Flat out irritated that he wasn't being funky and he was doing Jimi Hendrix.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of get it. And I think we've basically gone from Prince was the greatest guy in the world to, yeah, whatever. I think we've done that in the space of 5 minutes. Like, yeah, whatever.
Well, I wrote an essay online saying that I wasn't a fan of Prince's music, but I was a fan of Prince.
Okay, well, that's fair. And that's fair. I mean, I think that can apply to a lot of people. I think that can apply to... I ran into a guy on the street yesterday who was bending my ear about Frank Zappa. Apparently, there's a new movie about Frank Zappa's life. And he's bending my ear about it. He had WFMU stickers on his car, so that would give you an idea of where he was coming from. But he was a really cool guy. And he was telling me about Frank Zappa. And I said, well, you know, I don't really like Frank Zappa's music, but I have a lot of respect for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think I was basically talking out of my ass. But I mean, you know, essentially, it was, I feel the same way. And I feel that way about a lot of people, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I think about it.
Because if you look at his approach, though, The Super Bowl halftime show, the producers went backstage and they said, hey, man, it's raining. Are you okay with that? And he said, I want it to rain harder. I love that.
That was amazing.
And I love it when he stuck it to his record label because I think they owned the name Prince.
Right.
And he wanted to put out albums whenever he wanted, which to me sounds like a mess, but he's an artist. He just wants to create. And he said, okay. Well, you can't call me Prince. My name is a symbol that you can't even pronounce. I love that.
I know. It was, I mean, what people were irritated by that, but I thought it was the most brilliant thing in the world. And now that we've talked about a mess, let's get into the next mess
mm-hmm.
that's been left in the wake of Prince's death. Now, by the way, we should just say one word about Prince's death. And the final results aren't in, but it does appear that maybe he had an addiction to prescription painkillers,
mm-hmm.
which is a big problem in this country and mm-hmm. a big problem in the world, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I will tell you that what I've found out over the years, because I've had a few surgeries and they've prescribed things for me, but I will say that they've all been extremely conservative about prescribing stuff. I guess I have a pretty high pain threshold because I just don't want this stuff in me for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say that Percocet, if indeed it was Percocet, is apparently one of the most addicting substances known to man,
mm-hmm.
even more so than heroin. So it's easy to see how somebody who was struggling with pain could get into something like that and then not be able to get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and there's a lot of people out there struggling with it. And so, I mean, I think that in some ways, I kind of hope that Prince becomes sort of a poster child for avoiding that kind of problem.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly there are doctors and pharmacists who may abuse their discretion a little bit in giving people pain medication.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, I mean, it happens.
So back to his estate issue. This was a topic of conversation that I had maybe every day last week. Prince didn't have a will.
Well, at least we haven't seen one yet.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, they're still searching, and his financial people said, of course he did, but they could be wrong as well. But they're still searching. So what that leaves us is that Prince had, obviously, he had no parents that were living, and he had no children, and he had no wife, and he had a full sister, is it Tika or Tyka?
I don't know.
We'll call her Tika.
Okay.
But he also had half siblings, John, Noreen, Sharon, Alfred, Omar, and Lorena, who is deceased. And there's a new claim from a person who says that she was actually a sibling, Darcelle Johnston. And here's what you need to know from a legal standpoint. Because I'm a legal expert.
Yes, you are.
If you die intestate, which means that you die without a will, then what happens in almost every state, I believe every state, is that there's a sort of a ladder of succession as to who takes from your estate. It turns out that Minnesota, just like New Jersey, and I believe New York as well, treats half siblings as full siblings.
Wow.
So theoretically, all of this, if they eventually come to it, all of this will be split amongst all of those folks. Now, I don't know about Darcelle. I don't know whether her claim's legitimate or not. But right now, basically, there's a trust called the Bremer Trust who are going to administer the estate. And it's a little bit strange because, I mean, you think, well, shouldn't it just sort of be automatic? You know, I mean, shouldn't it just like the money just flow to the people who are on the list?
Mm-hmm.
But I guess it's a little more complicated. And one of the things that's really complicating is the fact that apparently Prince had an incredible number of recordings in his quote unquote vault that some people within that camp want to see released. Other people are... And this raises a very interesting question, which is that, I mean, no offense to John, Noreen, Sharon, Alfred, Omar, and, well, not Lorna, she's dead, and Tika, is do any of these people qualify as somebody who you would trust to decide whether or not they should release a song from Prince?
Right.
I mean, it reminds me of the Hendrix thing a little bit.
Mm.
The Hendrix thing is really bad.
Yeah.
It's been bad for years.
Mm-hmm.
And so... It's going to be interesting to see how it works out.
I mean, it's never pretty when something like this happens.
Well, it's never pretty. And by the way, I mean, you know, everyone likes to talk about their high-mindedness. But if you were telling me that there's a guy who died who's related to you and you might have some claim who has $300 million and the potential to have many millions more
yes.
in unreleased tracks. I mean, I'm sorry, but a lot of my values kind of go out the window.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, even if it's just a little bit of my values, a lot of my values, a little bit, you know.
I mean, things got messy with Nirvana when it was just Dave and Chris
absolutely.
And Courtney.
And things have gotten really weird with, we're not going to get into this, but things have gotten really weird with the Zappa family. It was a New York Times article last week about the Zappa family and the problems they're going through in trying to deal with Frank's legacy. So there's a lot of stuff out there, which means that if you are concerned at all about stuff like this, you should definitely get yourself a will and make sure that you know exactly who is going to succeed you.
Yeah, it's so frustrating because he had such control on Earth. Even we talked about it a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
If you had a 15-second snippet of a Prince song on Instagram, he'd rip it off.
He's so coming after you.
It kills me. It kills me. He has no control now.
I know. That's one of the things that made it so crazy was that here's a guy who was just so rigid in the way he
mm-hmm.
ran his business, and all of a sudden he just decides, oh, well, I'm not gonna be rigid about this. I'm going to let everybody else fight it out. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah,
it's a little bit crazy. Some people suggested to me that it might have been a religious thing, but is that real? I mean, is there some Jehovah's Witness thing that you don't? I can't imagine.
I don't know. So yeah, one more Prince story that speaks of how unique and how awesome he was last year in Baltimore when they were riding. Who steps in? Prince. Right. Let's have a concert, man. Let's come together. Who in America could have done that?
Exactly. And I'll give you one more. And the great thing about him doing that, by the way, was the fact that it wasn't Beyonce. It was like this guy who's to some younger people is kind of marginal in a way, but yet he steps into it. And I'll give you another thing that he did, which I found out about, was that he gave an incredible amount of money to green causes.
Okay.
And never said a word about it.
Yeah. I mean,
he never publicized. There was no publicity about it at all. He just gave his money. He didn't say anything. So he obviously was doing he was pretty intense and he was doing a lot of really cool stuff. And I think that it's pretty easy. So I guess we're back to the same theme, which is that, wow, you know, maybe we should have appreciated him a little bit more when he was here.
Well, but the thing is, I think he was appreciated.
Well, no, I mean, maybe you and me.
No, I appreciated him. I knew it all. And Lyle, I would go back to his music so often. I'm like, all right. This is the year that I'm going to get into Prince, and it just never happened. So it's not like I didn't try.
It just never happened.
And I don't like to collect deaths like baseball cards, but when I think of Prince, David Bowie automatically comes to mind, and I say to myself, how did we lose David Bowie and Prince in the same year? In a matter of months?
In a matter of months.
Because when you talk of artists, I think of them as the greatest artists of all time.
Well, it just sort of raised an issue to me, and I was thinking about this the other day, and again, this is all generational, but I was thinking, okay, exactly that. Like, we lost David Bowie and Prince, two people who basically define the words artist.
Yes.
Right? And artist-musician, artist-slash-musician.
And just to stop you for a second, whenever I would do host reads for MTV or VH1, a lot of times in the script, they would say, oh, well, this artist. And I said, guys,
it's not an artist.
Flo Rida is not an artist. You could call him a performer. You could call him a rapper. But David Bowie and Prince, they are artists.
Exactly.
And you never hesitated calling them artists.
And in film, you would call them auteurs. You know, you'd say, like, you know, it's Woody Allen or it's whatever. But I was thinking about this, and I was thinking, okay, well, so these people are gone, and I'm sure that they're going to be appreciated for what they did. But now, who now qualifies as being the next generation of those folks?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to fall into the OLD, old trap of saying, oh, you know, we had David Bowie, we had Prince, and you've got nothing. Because I don't think that's true. I've never felt that's true. So, but I'm curious. Okay, so who?
Yeah.
Now, I'm not sure of the word, so I'm not going to do it, but I don't want to put the evil eye, so to speak, on some other folks that are still around that may die, that are artists. But they probably, like I said, we're all going to die, and they're going to die, and then they'll be gone, and then who's going to come in behind them?
Well, I think you're perfectly segueing
which leads us to what?
Beyonce.
Right! Exactly! You see, I'm more of a genius than you ever give me credit for. I'm segueing, baby!
So, Beyonce, once again, released a surprise album that was also a visual album called Lemonade. And Becky with the good hair has become the most talked about song lyric in pop culture. The Formation World Tour is underway and people freaking love Beyonce. How much Beyonce is too much Beyonce?
Well, Jim, so here's what I'm going to ask you, and I risk the Beyoncé coming after me. Why should I care? And I think that's a question that would be on the minds of a lot of people. I realize that there's a lot of Beyoncé supporters out there, but why should I care about all of this? Do you have an answer for that?
Why Lyle Presler should care?
Yeah, or Joe Blow or Jane Frank. I don't know.
I don't know if I have an answer for you.
I don't think you do.
Because
I don't think you do. But let me ask you this. I mean, have you listened to the music?
Yes.
Is it good?
There aren't any immediate hit songs on it.
Okay.
Just like her previous album?
But do you think it's good? No, but do you think it's good?
I think it has the potential to grow on you like an artsy Radiohead album would.
Well, I mean, I agree with you on that because I have listened to it. I forced myself to listen to it. But the only two things, so since you can't answer my question in a compelling way, I would just like to make two points about this whole thing that is Lemonade.
Okay.
And the first thing is that we always, and it's a human thing and it's understandable and I get it. We always think that when people write lyrics, they're being autobiographical.
Mm-hmm.
We just assume that.
Yes.
And that is completely ridiculous. So now that leads me to my next thing, which is that isn't this just a gigantic marketing ploy?
Well, I mean, yeah, there was an article a couple of days ago that said how much money they'll make off of this supposed situation.
Right.
And now there's talk that Jay-Z's going to drop an album in response to Lemonade.
See, I mean, listen, obviously I don't know. Okay, I mean, there's no way for me to know. They take their wedding rings off. They, you know, they do this, they do that. There's no way for me to know whether that's legitimate or not, or whether she's really talking about her husband or she's talking about somebody else. And what's her name with the hair?
Becky.
Becky.
And with
who's
the good
Becky?
Hair.
Yeah, Becky with the good hair. Who's Becky? And I don't know whether it may all be true. It may be all completely true. Or it all may be just a gigantic marketing ploy.
Yeah.
In which case, I admire it. Mm-hmm. You know, we talked about artists and performers. There's genius in performing, too. And she is a genius at it.
Yeah.
So is it true? Is it not true? But the great thing is that we're talking about it.
Yeah.
And if we're talking about it, they're making money.
So we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we are going to talk about the mega concert.
Is there a huge vault of material that you've created that we've never even heard? And how do you make those choices? Because I'd like to hear everything that you pin. You know, just to hear it.
You would look different when it was finished. It takes a long time. There's a lot of music done.
Like how many songs?
I have no idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't go back in time and listen to it like that. I worked on it and brought it as far as I could right then. A lot of it I didn't even finish. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of the bootlegs that are out right now, they are unfinished, unmixed. You know, sometimes they change lyrics. And again, you wait until, you know, you can find other things to go with it. We live in a singles-driven market, but, you know, I come from the old school making albums, and that's what I love.
We are back, Jim Scheer with Lyle Presler, and being a fan of hip-hop music, this next story shocked me. Well, here's the deal. Four men have come out alleging that hip-hop pioneer Afrika Bambaataa sexually molested them in their youth. In a recent interview with Lord Sharif, a man who claims to be a former bodyguard of Afrika Bambaataa, he said that Bambaataa was molesting boys since the 1970s, claiming, quote, "It's been hundreds. I can say I walked in on stuff where I say, what the fuck is going on?" Unquote. Respected hip-hop writer and journalist Torre tweeted, "The Bambaataa story is the worst story in the history of hip-hop. He's a foundational figure, and pedophilia is monstrous."
Yep, yeah.
When I read Torre's tweet, that's right. When I took this story seriously, because originally one person came out and there were some people in the hip hop community who said, well, it's just gossip right now. But when three more came out, it adds some credence to it. Not saying that it's true. I would hope that it's not true, because if you're not familiar with Afrika Bambaataa, he is a figurehead of hip hop. He started
He's the
out.
Guy.
He started out as a gang member, and he started the Zulu Nation to get kids off the street. And if this story is true, it's disgusting because he preyed on kids that he took off the street.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really, really ugly thing. And I mean, it's particularly difficult. I remember, you know, a number of years ago when there was this accusation against Pete Townsend and about child pornography. And it wasn't even about abuse. It was about pornography.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when the story broke, I was, you know, because Pete is like, well, I call him Pete. I don't know Pete. But he's like an idol of mine. I mean, he's just an idol.
Mm-hmm.
And when I heard that story, I was just crestfallen. And it turned out that it wasn't true. It turned out that it was not really what it appeared to be at the beginning. And I certainly hope this turns out the same way. Because it's just, as you say, we're talking about a parade of horribles here, but it's worse that this is a guy who took people off the street to give them
yes.
a better life. And then, yeah, I mean, that, I don't know. I mean, it's sort of like we're talking about sinking in the mud here. Like, how far down is further down than the place you were before? You're still in the same place, because anything having to do with pedophilia or acts against underage people is just, or unwilling people, it's just disgusting. And so how far do we want to sink?
Because I remember when hip-hop started getting violent and misogynistic, and I hated that stuff. And then I would always go back to KRS-One or Afrika Bambaataa. And I said, no, you need to go back to the beginning. These guys were doing it right. They started the Zulu Nation.
Exactly.
They didn't want violence on the street. So if Afrika Bambaataa is flawed, I have to rethink everything now.
Well, you know, that's true. And the other thing about hip hop that's always been interesting, and rap's always been interesting, is their denial of homosexuality.
Mm-hmm.
And we've always heard the stories. I mean, we're not going to get any specifics, but you've heard the stories. And statistically speaking, I have to tell you that there's obviously gay people in hip hop.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there just are. And we all know that there are, but no one ever wants to talk about it because it's taboo. This thing is beyond taboo. This mm-hmm. is into a totally different place. And you're right. And I think that you mentioned KRS-One, and I know that he made some statements about it. And I think he's probably going to regret making some of those statements. Sadly, I think he's going to regret them. But I think you actually texted me and said the same thing, which was that basically he's trying to save hip hop. I mean, like, he's defending it. And maybe
I think KRS-One spoke out when it was just one allegation.
Right.
And he said, listen, it's gossip. You can't buy into it. And then when there were three more allegations, and then after the interview with Lord Sharif, then KRS-One posted a lengthy essay online explaining his position.
He?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. But I think that ultimately, like, I understand you want to rally around it because this is one of your kings, and you have to support, and you do have to defend against maybe just scurrilous gossip,
mm-hmm.
of which there is so much. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can go online right now and find something bad said about almost anyone.
Mm-hmm.
Pick your person and pick your subject, and you'll find it. So.
Yeah,
it's a shame. The whole thing's a shame.
Yeah, so I don't want to speculate anymore, but I did want to throw the story out there. And then when Torre tweeted about it, who I respect as a hip-hop writer, I thought, all right, now there needs to be a little bit of dialogue, at least on this show.
Right. Well, so, and I mean, I again, it's if it turns out to be the case, obviously we're talking about criminal, we're talking about civil lawsuits, we're talking about a lot of stuff. And you know, I and the one thing that always gets lost in this, and I mean, I'm gonna do the obvious here, but what always gets lost are the victims.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah
it's they always get nobody talks about them,
because I know
about the perpetrators.
Because yesterday I was thinking, I DJ from time to time, and I always throw in Planet Rock. And then I thought, what do I do about Planet Rock now? And then I thought to myself, well, listen, we're talking about kids that got molested. Who gives a crap about Planet Rock? So...
Right. Well, that raises a really interesting point, Jim. And that is that when you find out that somebody who creates great art
mm-hmm.
is a monster in real life? And yeah. what do you do about that? Pablo Picasso was not a nice guy.
Yeah.
And he was a bastard. I reached a point with Bad Brains where I wouldn't go to their shows anymore because of the way they treated people. And people were like, yeah, but they're great. And I'm like, yeah, I know they're great. I was in somebody's house in 1978 and saw how great they were. But I'm not going. I'm not giving them any more money because I don't like the way they behave. So, but then again, there's an argument in that. And the argument is like, well, what difference does it make?
Yeah.
Well, I guess it's all personal. You know, do you want to? I mean, I don't want to. And I think KRS-One was kind of making the point like, well, and he didn't make it well in the beginning, but it's sort of like it doesn't, whatever his behavior was, does not change his musical contribution.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's true, but I don't know how far one wants to go with that idea.
So we speculated about this a couple weeks ago, but Lyle, it's official now. The mega concert is happening. It's called Desert Trip, happening in Indio, California. Bob Dylan, The Rolling Stones, Neil Young, Paul McCartney, Roger Waters, and The Who. 3 days, two acts per day. Each act gets a full set with their own stage setup, and reportedly, they are getting $7 million each. And a friend of mine who is in the concert business said, yeah, that number's probably accurate.
$7 million a piece?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
Again, we come back to the notion of what would you do for money?
So, does it bother you, first of all, that this doesn't benefit any charity? This is not Live Aid. This is not Live 8. This is not the Global Citizens Concert. This is just a concert with the big names of the rock game.
Well, I mean, there's a couple ways to look at that. And the first one to me is like, I don't know that I ever believed any of that crap to begin with. I mean, you know, say it's for this. Well, if you have any experience with charities, you know that there's some of them are good and pass along a certain percentage of what they make to their actual goal. Mm-hmm. And then others eat it all up in executive salaries and administrative costs and the rest of it. So who the hell knows? And I'm not going to denigrate anybody because I have no idea. The other thing I would say is that, oh, okay, let's go back to Pete Townsend. So Pete Townsend takes in $7 million. That's not to say that Pete Townsend isn't also then giving on his own. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, like he may go home and he may give $2 million to a hospital.
Right.
You know, so we don't know that. So I think that I understand your point, and I kind of think from a marketing standpoint, it might be better if they would say, but then what would they do? Do they go to the AARP? I mean, see, I think that would be great. We're giving it to the old people. We're just going to, you know what we're going to do? We're going to buy them GPS units for their cars because they get lost all the time. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it doesn't offend me on any real level. I mean, I think that if you want to go, and by the way, if you want to go see that concert, I'm sure it's going to be good. I mean, as I've told you many times, you could not pay me enough money to drive out into the desert to see a show, okay? But that's, you know, but that's just me. And I can't do it. But if I'm sure it's going to be good. I mean, for $7 million, I'd bring my A game, wouldn't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, of course. Now, I mean, do you think this is a swan song?
Oh, I doubt it, sadly.
Because I feel like the last 30 years have been the Rolling Stones swan song.
Well, you know what? It would be an interesting concept if they were to say, like, this is it.
Yeah, like, but I don't, like you said, a retirement match. Like, this is the last concert any of us are ever performing.
Exactly. If they did that, that would be compelling.
Yes.
They would actually have people, they would have 100,000, well, they'd have hundreds of thousands of people.
No, as you know, Lyle, rock and roll is not doing so swell these days.
No.
So it bothers me a bit that the rich are getting richer while the genre dies. Shouldn't there be one young band on the bill each day? They could put them on as people come into the turnstiles.
Now you've raised a really good point there. And, you know, it's funny because rock and roll has been dying for a while now.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some promising signs. There's always a promising sign. Like, I thought Buck Cherry was a promising sign.
Okay.
I thought those guys were going to really do it. I mean, if you're willing to go up there and sing a song about cocaine and talk about it, like, you can win with that. And it didn't happen. It didn't happen. And I was really sad about that. And there have been a few examples of that over the last several years where you've thought, like, okay, this could happen. Now, there's still people who are hanging on. I mean, there's still sort of, there's still Coldplay.
Yeah, I'm not even saying put an unknown band on the bill, but put maybe Muse or the Killers on the bill.
Well, Muse is a good example. That's a good one. And Mumford & Sons actually kind of went in a rock direction, you know, on their last record, although I don't know that it was terribly successful. But, yeah, I agree with you. I think you've hit on one of the big problems with that. And I'm not so sure why people like Mick Jagger and Keith Richards and Pete Townsend and the rest of them didn't say, hey, you know what? We'd like to invite some bands to play on this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have traditionally done that.
Yeah, and you don't have to package. Just one band per day.
Exactly. I mean, the Stones did it for years and years. I mean, they had Peter Tosh on their tours.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no one cared. But it was great. It was great for him, and it was great for reggae. And they did a lot of stuff. So I'm a little surprised by that, I will say.
And finally, sad news out of California, Afeni Shakur, former Black Panther, and most notably mother of Tupac Shakur, died at her California home on Monday. There will be a coroner's investigation, but it is suspected she died from cardiac arrest. Shakur was 69 years old.
And we still have never gotten to the bottom of that whole thing.
No, not at all.
I don't know that we ever will.
Lyle, there's a big birthday week happening.
This was actually a really big birthday week, and so I'm gonna give you the people that were born today, which include, and I'm gonna leave people out of course, but we include Ian McCulloch, the singer of Echo and the Bunnymen, who's 57 today. Chris Brown is 27 today, younger than I would have suspected. Okay. Adele is 28 today. But yesterday we had some really interesting birthdays, a whole bunch of them, and we had three bass players. We had Mike Dirnt from Green Day, Mike being the only minor threat fan in Green Day, I think, 44 years old. We had Dallin Weeks from Panic at the Disco, one of my daughter's favorite bands now.
Nice.
He's 35. We had Danny Wilkin from Rixton, one of my daughter's former favorite bands, who's 26. Randy Travis, who I have always loved, great country artist. He's 57. Lance Bass from NSYNC was 37 yesterday. Gary Holt, who is the guitar player, was in Exodus and Slayer, was 52.
Okay.
Little Boots, you might remember her. Mm-hmm. She had a song called Remedy, which is a great hit. She's 32. Dick Dale, Mr. Surf Guitar, who influenced so many people.
Yes.
And is probably still influencing people, I would hope. Mm-hmm. He's 79. He was 79 yesterday. And the unkillable guitarist for Motley Crue, Mick Mars, turned 65 yesterday.
Wow.
Unkillable.
Yeah.
Don't even try it.
Yeah, don't.
I've tried. I've shot things at him. It doesn't work. It won't work.
Well, Lyle, I'm happy to report that the number one single on the Billboard Hot 100 this week
is Work.
Is no longer Work from Rihanna featuring Drake. It is Panda from Designer. The number one album on the Billboard 200, Lemonade from Beyonce. The number one song on iTunes, One Dance from Drake, featuring Wizkid and, I believe, Kyla. The number one album on iTunes, Views from Drake. And the number one song on Spotify this week, One Dance from Drake, featuring Wizkid and Kyla. We are going to take a break, and when we come back, Lyle and I will have our music picks of the week.
It's a double-edged sword, you know. A lot of artists aren't getting paid full scale for their art, and the internet, because of downloading and things like that, is kind of like a black hole, and it's hard to audit, it's hard to get accounting, and it's not that it's just about the money, but it's about justice and fairness. And when people say that they love you and they respect you, but at the same time take, you know, 80% of your earnings, then expect you to fix your own communities, and they'll probably edit all of this out, but then it gets, that's the sharp part of the sword, and we're at the wrong end of it right now. So eventually, with courageous people going out there and actually saying something and standing up for it, I think we'll get some balance.
Hey everybody, we are back from our time out where we get a sip of water and bitch about Radiohead.
Right.
We'll have an official, I will have an official Radiohead bitch session at some point.
You know what, we could actually do an entire show.
Oh, okay.
We could do a show where we could talk about what we really liked about them. And I have maybe a couple things, and you probably have lots of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we could do a whole thing, and then we could just bitch them out for.
Yeah.
And we can hope that they're actually laughing someplace.
Yeah, and we should probably do it when they put out their new album.
I think that would be great.
Yeah.
Whenever they put, we'll do two shows that week. We'll do a regular show and we'll do a Radiohead show.
All Works right, for I'm me. Down. Yeah, I'm down.
All right, we're doing it.
So
all right,
time
we're
now
doing it.
For the music picks of the week. Mine is I Took a Pill in Ibiza, the Sieb remix from Mike Posner. This
Mike
comes
Posner.
Off of his new album, At Night Alone, which comes out on Friday. This one, it took a while to grow on me. I understand that it's a hit on pop radio. I finally got it last week when I listened to the lyrics, and I thought, damn, man, these lyrics are the most personal, defeating lyrics you will hear on pop radio this year.
But are they autobiographical?
I think they are.
Well, they might be.
I'm just here's a line. I'm just a singer who already blew his shot. I get along with old timers because my name's a reminder of a pop song people forgot. Because he had a big hit. He had a big hit in Cool Like Me. And then.
Oh, right.
So Cool Like Me was his big hit off of his debut album. And he became very successful. And then he battled with depression because he couldn't really handle life in the spotlight. And then he was off the grid, and then he was going to put out a second album called, I think it was called Sky High, and then he scrapped that. And in the song, he also sings, you don't want to be high like me. But what confuses me about this whole thing is that if you listen to the album, which you'll be able to on Friday, they're all stripped down acoustic ballads talking about, I blew it, I'm done, I'm over, I feel 10 years older, blah, blah, blah. But then there's six dance club remixes at the end of the album, which are probably going to be huge hits on pop radio, which will start the vicious circle all over again. What's he doing?
I don't know, man. I hope he's more grounded than he appears.
Yeah, so maybe he has it figured out. Maybe he's like,
maybe this is sort of like, okay, I'm going to show you this stuff because I've already mastered it.
Yeah, and
I hope so.
I'm confused because when he performs live, will he do the acoustic stuff or the dance remix stuff? I don't know.
Only time will tell.
Yeah, so here is I Took a Pill in Ibiza from Mike Posner.
I took a pill in Ibiza to show Avicii I was cool. And when I finally got sober, felt 10 years older, but there was something to do. I'm living out in L.A. I drive a sports car just to prove
I'm a real big baller cause I made $1 million and I spend it on girls and shoes. But you don't wanna be high like me, never really know why like me. You don't ever wanna step off that roller coaster and all alone. And you don't wanna ride the bus like this, never know who to trust like this. You don't wanna be stuck up on that stage singing, stuck up on that stage singing. Oh, I know a sad soul, sad soul. Darling, oh, I know a sad soul, sad soul. Cause my name's a reminder of a pop song people forgot. And I can't keep a girl, no. Cause as soon as the sun comes up, I cut them all loose and work's my excuse. But the truth is I can't open up. And you don't wanna be high like me, never really knowing why like me. You don't ever wanna step off that roller coaster and be all alone. And you don't wanna ride the bus like this, never know who to trust like this. You don't wanna be stuck up on that stage and stuck up on that stage singing. Oh, I know a sad soul, sad soul. Darling, oh, I know a sad soul, sad soul.
All right. It grew on me.
I like it a lot. I think I was telling you off air that, you know, my daughter really likes it, but we looked up the lyrics and I was like, okay, you really don't need to be. And she's a lyric person too. And mm-hmm. Now she tells me, she goes, oh, Mike Posner, this is great. Although she says Posner all the time. Okay. So she goes, Mike, and we were like, Posner. So she's like, Mike Posner. She goes, yeah, but it's not really suitable for me.
Okay. Wow. That's very grown up of her.
She says suitable. It's not really suitable for me. And I said, well, you know, you can still listen to it. But I like it. I think it's good.
Yeah, it's not bubblegum lyrics. See, I mean, he's...
No, not at all. Not at all.
Bearing his soul right there.
And by the way, yeah, and totally, totally out of left field for that genre. Mm-hmm. Because most of those lyrics are just like, I mean, you and I could... I mean, between you and me, because considering what geniuses we are and wordsmiths... we could sit down and write 10 of these songs in like 15 minutes. In fact, we probably should do that for our Radiohead special.
Yeah, we yeah.
Well, my pick of the week, I mean, I'm going to have to do this just because... actually, I was thinking about doing this anyway because of Prince, and I was thinking about going back and finding a Prince thing. And what I remembered is that people who went to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction of George Harrison talked about how Prince played, you know, in one of those really usually awful jam sessions that they have with all mm-hmm. the musicians.
Yeah.
And I tend to avoid that like poison. I avoid poison too, by the way, but,
that's good.
But then again, you know, people started talking about it, and I think it even reached the point where it was embedded, this video of Prince's performance at the 2004 Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction of George Harrison doing While My Guitar Gently Weeps, which is one of my, you know, it's a top song for me. I love that song. Mm-hmm. And he didn't rip it off of the Chiffons or anything. So, And I remember the people telling me how great it was, and I think the New York Times had it embedded like in an article, and I hadn't watched it in a while, and I went back and watched it, and you have to sort of suffer through, you know, you have to suffer through Tom Petty, and you have to suffer through, you know, what's his name from ELO, and all that stuff.
Because it's Tom Petty, Steve Winwood, Jeff Lynne, and yeah. others.
And George's son, yeah. So, and that's all fine. And it sounds great. It sounds great. I mean, you would expect it to sound great. But then Prince comes out and starts playing. And I have to say, I never really cared that much for his guitar playing. I mean, I knew he was technically good and everything. Mm-hmm. And yet I've suffered through like long-winded stuff where I'm like, okay, dude, yeah, you've got all the pyrotechnics. It all looks good, but it isn't going anywhere. But the guitar solo that he pulls off in that song, and granted, it's a song made for guitar solos. I mean, that's why George Harrison wrote it, so he could play guitar over it. It's technically great. It's got all your little doodads, all your hammer-ons and your pull-offs and all the rest of it. But it's also incredibly lyrical. It's incredibly soulful. And then he even gets into just like, I'm not even going to play strings anymore. I'm going to play chords. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do the chords over it. And it's really astounding. And the best thing about it is that when he's done, he throws the guitar up in the air and he walks off. And it's like dropping the mic, man.
Yes.
It's just like, I am done. I am Prince. That's it.
Because, I mean, I've heard great guitar solos before, but usually the guy, his head is buried into his chest and he's making these goofy faces. And Prince looks so freaking awesome doing it.
He looks great. He's just not doing guitar face. He's not doing John Mayer guitar face.
I mean, swagger's off the chain.
It's just insane. And it's like, you sit there, and again, I'm really not. I mean, I appreciate guitar solos, but I'm not a guitar solo guy.
Me neither.
But like, this thing is just, and then when you think that he's done, he's like, okay, now I'm just going to play chords.
While My Guitar Gently Weeps from Prince, Tom Petty, Steve Winwood, Jeff Lynne, and others. Enjoy. Everybody, it's time to play Ask Lyle.
Ask Lyle.
We need theme music. We need theme music for that.
Okay. But the
somebody out there. Esquire.
Yeah, so if someone would like to make a little jingle, we would take it and we would play it. So
and
once
it
again,
sort of, it should be like Ask Lyle, something like that. Yeah.
So if you would like to ask Mr. Lyle Presler a question, hit me up on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Use the hashtag Ask Lyle. My first question: are you familiar with James Corden, and are you a fan of Carpool Karaoke?
I am, and I am.
Mm.
I'm not, you know, when I say I'm a fan, I'm not like a rabid fan of it. I, unfortunately, I don't get to stay up very late anymore because I, again, once again, suffer from that terrible disease called OLD.
Yeah.
But of course, you can catch it the next morning online thanks to our wonderful interweb, worldwide interweb. I like it. I mean, I think there comes a point in all of these things where it becomes sort of like, okay, it's we get it, you know. Mm-hmm. But are you thinking of something specific?
No, I'm just. I was watching one this morning.
Okay,
and I thought, what does Lyle think of this?
I mean, listen. If I were one of those people, I would do it.
Okay.
I mean, he seems like a nice guy. I mean, he seems like a fun guy, and like I suspect that, and I suspect like those people. My experience with people like him and not mm-hmm. him is that once you're around them, and you know this because you've been doing this stuff for years, it's like once you're around people like that, they're infectious, and you eventually just start doing what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
I think I know your answer for this one, but it's from my good friend Steve Meehan, who. He was the drummer of my band. He moved to Texas, and we haven't played since.
Okay.
He writes, with bands like Guns N' Roses, Blink 182, Sum 41, etc., returning and reuniting, what bands would you like to see make a comeback? This could be a one-word answer from you.
None. No, I've actually missed some of the ones that I really... would have actually liked to, like, I missed X when they reunited. It's terrible.
Okay. So, yeah.
I mean, but the answer is none. No.
I asked that because it was from Steve. So, Steve,
Great. No, I appreciate that. Yeah, absolutely. Fantastic.
So this one comes from Lane Steven Sparber, and this will be our final question of Ask Lyle. How about a full gear report from the Minor Threat days?
Full gear?
Yeah, so what was everyone playing on?
Oh, everyone playing?
Yeah.
Well, this could go on forever, but
I'll give us a quick one.
Really quickly. The really quick thing was it was a half-stack Marshall. I think it was a 100-watt head with a standard, you know, slant bottom. I played a Les Paul, a 1978 off-the-rack Les Paul Tobacco Sunburst.
Nice.
Which actually some people who played the guitar who were experts said this is a fantastic guitar. I don't know how it happened because they generally sucked in that period. But unfortunately, I don't have the guitar anymore. I still have the serial number. So if somebody's out there and thinks they have my, I bought one that I thought was mine that wasn't.
Was it stolen?
No, it wasn't stolen. I sold it, and I traded it for something that's even better. I mean, money wise, but
okay.
But it's gone. It's long gone. In fact, the guy who actually did sell it eventually said, "Boy, I wish I never sold that guitar because I could sell it back to you for $30,000." Yeah. So Brian played through a variety of stuff. I think at one point there was an Ampeg, and at other points there. Brian had a custom-made precision-based. I mean, when I say it was custom-made, it had various parts on it, but it was a precision, like a Fender precision bass.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really, really super cool. And he had it custom-made for him by a guy we knew named Steve Mikkelsethian, who was Angela Instruments, was a wonderful guy, and this was about as good a bass as you could possibly get at that point. So that's the gear report. I think.
And then
Jeff
what was?
Played,
and then Jeff's drums.
Jeff played. Did he play? Ooh, boy! Now he would be offended because
I know.
I probably can't remember. I know he played Zildjian cymbals. I think they were Tamas, maybe. Maybe it was Ludwig's. Ludwig.
Okay. We're done. We'll be back next week. Anything to add for this this weekend?
I think, as people say, you know, I've done enough damage for one day.
For Lyle Presler, my name is Jim Scheer, and we will see yins later.
So long, farewell, I'll be the same tonight.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, Elvis has just left the building.